healthcare enrollment policies that are all over the map, billing errors by the millions, risky opioid prescription practices. Those are among the issues Veterans Affairs Department auditors have been looking at lately, with some disturbing findings. Joining me with highlights, VA Inspector General Michael Missel. Mr. Missel, good to have you back.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
Let's talk first about the study on VHA's healthcare enrollment program at medical facilities. This is, correct me if I'm wrong, the process by which a veteran first gets involved with VA for the delivery of healthcare.
That is correct. A veteran doesn't automatically get healthcare just by the status of being a veteran. There's about 21 million veterans, and about 9 million are actually enrolled in the healthcare system, so they have to go through an enrollment process.
And you looked at this process to make sure that it's consistent from center to center, and also how long it takes, correct?
That's correct. There's essentially two ways to get enrolled in the system. One is VA has a health eligibility center. About 9% of the applications go through there. We did a report in 2015, which found some very serious deficiencies there, including having about 867,000 open applications, more than 300,000 of whom were reported deceased by the Social Security Administration. So we decided to take a broader look since most of the eligibility decisions are made at individual medical centers.
And what was your chief finding there?
We found that only 38 of the 106 facilities had actual enrollment policies that detailed the steps to process applications. We also found that a number that had local policies adopted practices that were inconsistent with national policies. We also found that the reliability of the enrollment data certainly could be improved. Of 427,000 enrollment records we tested, only 197,000, or 46%, represented current year applications. The others were older applications. So they just didn't even have a good sense of what they had in their enrollment processing queue.
Shouldn't there be a single national standard, and maybe should the whole process be standardized and rather than left to the individual centers?
Well, that's what we recommended. There are national policies, but unfortunately, they weren't being applied at the local level. So one of our recommendations was to have standardized enrollment policies and procedures, and then to have better oversight of those so that they are implemented as designed.
And how does this relate to the wait times? I think the wait time issue was with respect to people already enrolled waiting for appointments, but is there also an inadequately long time for getting eligible in the first place?
There very well could be. Unfortunately, the records weren't good enough for us to test how long veterans wait before they're actually eligible to be part of the healthcare system, but it clearly is additional time that goes in before somebody gets into the system to then be put on electronic lists for services.
And VA's reaction was?
They agreed with our findings, and they agreed to implement the recommendations that we made.
And another report that you have done here is also with respect to it involves the relationship between policy and the local centers, and that is inappropriate billing of veterans and third-party payers. You found that 11% of millions of bills were not done correctly.
That's correct. VA cannot bill veterans or third-party payees for treatment of service-connected conditions or for prescriptions to treat service-connected conditions. We found that about 11%, as you noted, of bills were sent out to those with service-connected conditions.
So even under the CHOICE program, where veterans are encouraged to get care outside of the VA system, the CHOICE program providers are not supposed to treat them for service-related problems?
They treat it, but it's the billing. VA has certain processes where there could be essentially a copay, but if it's service-connected, veterans should not be billed for those services, or if they have some kind of insurance or other third-party payee, they shouldn't be billed for that either.
So who does get the bill if it's outside of VA?
If it's outside VA, it could be to an insurance company or a third-party provider. In some situations, VA, as I said, does bill for certain services. But if it's service-connected, they're not supposed to. And we found that VA didn't have a good process to essentially block off those service-connected bills.
Sounds like another case where there needs to be a national policy that is monitored for compliance everywhere.
Yes, and again, we recommended that VA should identify, and in situations where they find veterans or third-party payees who were billed improperly, they should provide refunds, and they clearly need to improve the processes so this doesn't continue to happen.
We're speaking with Veterans Affairs Inspector General Michael Missel. And speaking of outside caregivers, your third report here today has to do with opioid prescriptions. And you found that those that are given and administered outside of the VA itself, that is by choice providers, had some more risk apparently than those coming from VA directly with respect to opioids. What did you find?
That's correct. This is a very important report because overdose deaths involving opioid prescriptions have quadrupled since 1999. It's particularly relevant to VA, where some estimates by VA are that about 50% of veterans treated at VA are suffering from chronic pain. And so VA launched an opioid safety initiative in 2014. It focuses on patient education, alternative therapeutic approaches to chronic pain, and a real emphasis on the patient-provider collaboration. And this has reduced the opioid prescriptions at VA. As you know, about 30% of veterans now receive care in the community, either through the CHOICE program or other programs. But what we found is the non-VA providers, those not in the VA system, are not required to follow the Opioid Safety Initiative. So we came up with findings and recommendations to close that loophole.
And what were the chief ones there?
The chief ones were that non-VA providers should receive the guidelines for prescribing opioids that are in the Opioid Safety Initiative, make sure that the non-VA providers get an up-to-date list of medications and medical history so they can see the totality of a veteran's medical records. That's one of the great strengths of VA. It is an integrated healthcare system where a provider within the VA system has access to all the records. We want to make sure that the non-VA providers have that same access. And then also, all non-VA providers should submit any opioid prescriptions to a VA pharmacy, again, just so the records get into the VA system. And if non-VA providers' opioid practices are in contrast with the Opioid Safety Initiative, then VA needs to take action to protect the veteran.
And I guess this is a double question, but is there evidence that there were worse outcomes, not just risk, but actual outcomes for those getting opioids with choice providers? And in general, are opioid prescriptees from VA in better shape than those of the American public at large?
We had examples of where veterans got opioid prescriptions outside the system with an adverse outcome that may have been prevented if they had been treated with prescriptions inside the system. And I don't have the statistics of total opioid prescriptions in the private sector versus at VA, but certainly VA has shown improvement since the Opioid Safety Initiative was launched in 2014 in terms of reducing opioid prescription.
Because what I'm getting at is perhaps Veterans Affairs has some kernel of an answer to the opioid problem at large, if the country would look to it.
It seems to be an effective program, and I know we're watching it very carefully, and if lessons can be learned, then I think the healthcare system as a whole would benefit from it.
Michael Missel is Inspector General of the Veterans Affairs Department. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate it.
Find links to his reports and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.